Episode 85.
Music provided by Mivio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mivio.com. Welcome to another episode of BoodlaNetwork.com. My name is Randy Kentrell, coming to you from the Yellow Studio in Dallas, Texas. It is episode 85. Last night, one of my favorite television programs came on, NCIS. Yep, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan, and if you watch the show at all, then you know that Special Agent Jethro, Leroy Gibbs, he has some rules. I'm sure somebody somewhere has compiled all of these rules and has them written down. I didn't Google it, and I didn't find out, but I do know that last night we learned what rule number 5 was, and that's what provokes hitting record today. Let me play for you the end of the show. It's about a 90 second sound clip, and in this clip, Tony DiNozzo, an agent who works for Gibbs, he recalls the time where he leaves the Baltimore Police Department. Gibbs has invited him up to NCIS, and Tony is having this flashback memory of his first walking into NCIS, where Gibbs walks him down a hall and points him to go into a room where he can fill out an application. And here's the sound clip.
I got it.
Made it.
Yeah. Wow, I'm not a big fan of the orange. And the glare off that skylight's ridiculous.
You gonna ask?
Nope.
I'm leaving it alone. It was wrong, way wrong, but...
It's your partner.
Ex-partner. I'm not going back to Baltimore. I can't. I don't know what I'm gonna do. Maybe being a cop isn't for me. Did you just physically assault me?
I don't have a lot of rules. But rule number 5 is you don't waste good. You're good.
Thanks. Don't make a habit of that.
Did I mention you're a devious man, Gibbs?
Boy, I got vision, and the rest of the world is wearing bifocals.
Butch Cassidy, nice!
Huh. Rule number 5, don't waste good. Don't waste good. That's a pretty good rule. This is Teacher Appreciation Week. Well, I think technically today is Teacher Appreciation Day. And I think it's fitting. I think it's fitting, don't waste good. Lots of discussion all over the internet about teachers and the profession getting respect. Earning respect, being held in high regard. There's kind of long been the debate that where teachers teach in a community where the average pay is significantly higher than what teachers earn, that there is a lower level of respect paid. I can see that. I can see that. I don't know that that's always the case. I don't know that that's entirely true. And where teachers exist in a school where their income is on par, maybe even higher than the community average, then teachers are held in a higher esteem. Here's the sad part about that discussion, whether it's true or not. Here's the sad part about it. The fact that it could be true, and the fact that in some cases it probably is true, and the fact that we can measure good or we can measure value with a dollar sign is just kind of sad to me. It's kind of disheartening. Don't waste good. And I'm going to argue today that sometimes good is wasted because good seeks dollars instead of adding value. No, they're not synonymous. Sad to report, all you have to do is open up your local paper to the sports section. All you have to do is take a look at any kind of an entertainment magazine, People, Rolling Stone, and you will see that top pay is given to people who entertain us. Those people who entertain us are the people that we give the most money because we find great value in entertaining. One reason that teachers don't make any more money than they make is because, well, there's little doubt, society as a whole doesn't value that nearly as highly as we value what Lady Gaga can do or what Kobe can do. Sorry, I mean, it's just that is the reality. Doesn't make it right. Don't waste good. What does that mean to you? I know a lot of people who have talents that range all over the board. I know some who are talented at things, and the things that they are most talented at are not the things that they do. Oh, they might do it on the side. They might do it in the evenings because they just love it. But it's not what they do. It's not the value that they provide society. It's not the value they provide the world. On this show, NCIS, at the conclusion of this show, Tony has discovered that his partner's a dirty cop. And so he leaves the Baltimore Police Department. Gibbs, of course, wants him to come and join the NCIS team, which he obviously does. And when he walks down this hall and he's lamenting the fact that, you know, maybe being a cop isn't his thing. He was a detective. Well, Gibbs gives him that notorious back of the head slap because Gibbs thinks it's stupid. That's just stupid. Why? Well, because rule number five is you don't waste good, and he tells Tony to his face, you're good. You're good at being a cop. You're good at being a detective. You're good at being an investigator. You shouldn't waste that. Teachers shouldn't waste themselves. Nobody should. And we should certainly make it a priority to encourage our kids not to waste themselves, not to waste their lives, not to waste their lives in trying to be something that they're not, not to waste their lives in trying to fulfill the desires of well-meaning parents or grandparents, but chase their dream, chase their passion, chase what inspires them, what gets them going. Don't waste good. The other line that he throws out is from the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I got vision. Everybody else has bifocals. And it sort of is at the heart of today's show, and that is that great leaders do indeed see the future first. In this television show, Mark Harmon, who plays the role of Agent Gibbs, he sees the future for Anthony DiNozzo. And the future that he sees is him being a good investigator working in NCIS. And, of course, that's what happens. But Gibbs saw it first. And as we are embarked here upon Teacher Appreciation Week, I wonder those in education, I wonder specifically those leaders in the classroom, those classroom teachers, as you look out over the faces of these students, whether they are kindergarten kids or whether they are high school seniors who are now just weeks away from graduation, I wonder if you've got vision. I wonder if you've got vision when everybody else may have bifocals when it comes to the kids that are sitting in front of you. And I wonder if rule number five is in play as you encourage these kids, don't waste good. I mean, these kids are good at something. You yourself, you're good at something. Don't waste good. Rather embrace it, chase it, use it. Now, my mind races with a litany of things that are worthy of our consideration because, first and foremost, as Tony's walking down the hall and lamenting the fact that he's really not sure what he should do, maybe he shouldn't even be a cop, he doesn't see the perspective that Gibbs does. He does not see that he's good. He's not really sure. Gibbs is. But he's not. And just looking him in the eye and telling him, rule number five is don't waste good, and he utters two words that make a seismic shift in Tony's head. And the two words are, you're good. Well, game over. Tony turns around, he opens the door, and he walks in to fill out the application. Now, there's a really attractive girl behind the desk, and that's how the show ends. You obviously can't hear that in the audio, but Tony looks at her and smiles, and that's the end of the episode. Gibbs saw it first. I think those of us who are in leadership positions when it comes to the kids of the world, kids ranging from preschool all the way up to high school, we've got to have the vision. We've got to see the future first. We've got to see the good that they can offer. We've got to see where their strengths are. We've got to work at encouraging those to come out. We've got to encourage these kids. And even if it's as simple as you're good. Because it can make a huge difference in the life of these kids. There are very few adults that I know that cannot tell a story of something that they did as a kid, something that they felt they were pretty good at, something that other people even told them they were good at, but for whatever reason, it's left in the wake of their past. They never pursued it. My generation is very typical, I think, of a generation that in many cases, we didn't pursue some things because they just were outside the realm of possibility, or at least we thought they were. And that's no longer the case, thankfully, because today we live in a world where I believe most of us, certainly I think most right-thinking people, we have the notion, we have the belief that there are many, many more things possible than there were 40 years ago. I certainly would hope that that's the case. It's very true that whether we are pessimistic or whether we are optimistic about the future, it very much depends on us. Now, yes, it could be argued, well, I can give you all of this compelling evidence to give you reasons why you should be pessimistic and why there's no reason to believe that things are going to get better. And on the other hand, those that have a contrarian position to that could say, well, I can give you all these reasons why you should feel good about the future, why you should feel hopeful for the future. And truth be told, both can make a compelling argument for their position, and I think it probably rather boils down to how do you choose to live your life? Do you choose to live your life looking doom and gloom, or do you choose your life vision to be hopeful, optimistic? Now, it's clearly easier to embrace doom and gloom, because you can find that. It's so readily available. Go anywhere, go out in public, eavesdrop, engage in conversation with other people, and our human habit tends to be to gripe and moan and complain and lament all of the things that are happening bad for us. It's much more difficult to go out into the world and just randomly find someone who's, man, you know, isn't today great? Let me tell you about this thing that happened to me or that thing that happened to me and how great it was. That's not real common. And sometimes we look at those kind of people like, what's wrong with you? Man alive. Don't you know that it's crazy out here? Don't you know that it's awful? And I think here we are in Teacher Appreciation Week, and I'm seeing plenty of that. I've seen plenty of that all day long in social media. I've seen all the lambasting of the politicians, which, okay, that's easy enough to do. I mean, man alive, talk about a really, really easy thing. Now, I happen to be a small government kind of a guy. I'm not a big believer in Big Brother. I'm not a big believer in, oh, well, the government will take care of us. No, I'm rather fond of the whole notion. Just get out of my way and enable me to be accountable, to be responsible, to take care of myself. If the government would just do that, I would think, great, job done. And of course they won't. And I have hope that government might shrink in the years to come. But you know what? No matter what, I'm going to live my life and I'm going to make my own choices and my own decisions. And hey, whatever I can't control, I'm frankly not going to lose a whole lot of sleep over it because, well, I can't control it. So why bother? And I think it's very easy for anybody, for businessmen, for educators, to lament those things that are beyond our control and to waste ourselves, to waste the good that we could do, to waste it in time and in effort on things that we can't control. And what those do is those serve as major distractions to veer us off course away from the very things that we can have a huge impact on if we would just do it. If we would just do the good that we're capable of doing. So I'm a big believer in optimism. I'm a big believer in the art of possibility. Probably because I grew up in a day and age where, yes, we were taught that things were possible, and parents tried to teach kids, you know, you can be anything you want, but it was all really just verbiage. I've said before of two particular things that I did as a young person that I stopped doing, and the main reason I stopped doing it is because the generation that raised my generation were very practical people. Nothing wrong with that, by the way. They came by it honestly. Because, you see, my grandparents had a vivid recall of the Depression. My grandparents were people who endured that and had vivid memory of it. And so they brought up a generation, my parents. And that generation was certainly taught to behave in a way and go forth out into the world in a way to protect yourself from such a catastrophic event. How do you do that? Well, guess what everybody needed? Guess what everybody didn't have in the Depression? A job. You need a job. Well, you don't need just any job. You want a good job. You want a job that you can hang on to. You want a job that you can you can sustain over the course of your life. And so by the time it got to my generation, we too were taught similar things. But we didn't raise our kids that way, and that wasn't necessarily by choice, but it was because now we were a little bit removed from the Great Depression, and we were raising a generation that was just wired a bit differently than we were. We were practical because our parents were ridiculously practical, and their parents were even more so. By the time my kids came onto the scene, we're now three generations removed from those people who had firsthand great awareness, vivid memory of the Great Depression, and, okay, practicality, it had a place, but, well, I can illustrate it this way. My generation was very focused mainly on stuff. Well, where did that come from? Well, now people are always wired that way anyway, I think, by and large. We can be a very materialistic people, certainly here in America. Go back to the Great Depression when people didn't have much, and of course, guess what people are going to value? Well, they're going to value the stuff that they don't have, stuff that they lost. And that's passed on a couple of generations. By the time you get to my children, My children were more interested in something other than the possession. They were interested in the experience. The experience. And that's a seismic shift from stuff to experience. Case in point, hockey's kind of a big deal in my house. And if the choice were left to when my kids were home, my son in particular, who still plays hockey as an adult, you could have something or you could go experience something like a Dallas Stars hockey game. Oh, tickets to the hockey game. No question. I mean, there's no debate. You know, well, would you like to have a new whatever? Something materialistic, or would you rather have tickets to the Stars game? Give me tickets to the Stars game. Why? It's an experience. It's an experience. My generation would have looked at that like, well, yeah, but it's kind of a one and done. You go, it's over, it's done. But my son's generation doesn't view it that way. My son's generation views it as I go, I experience it, it's great, it's wonderful, and now I have the memory of it. Now, that's just kind of cool. It's just kind of cool, and I really can't argue with it because, frankly, I think it fits Gibbs' rule number 5, don't waste good. And I mean, how can you argue with that? Now, whether or not you see any value in going to a Dallas Stars or any hockey game or not, that's beside the point. But there is something, hopefully there is something, this memory building, this experience-based kind of a thing that may resonate with you. We've all sat around a home where death has visited. And while it's true that certain families can argue over, okay, well, who gets what? I want this, and somebody else pipes up, well, I want to have that. And once all that, if that is the case, once that's over, it's no longer about stuff. You sit around, and I've sat around too many of these houses where death has visited, and it all goes back to memory. It all goes back to the experiences. It all goes back to the times that we had with that person who's now gone. And story after story gets told and retold again. We don't care what they had. If they had little, if they had much, we don't care. We're not telling stories. Yeah, you remember the time when he went and he bought that fancy car? Unless there's some story, some compelling story attached to it, the fact that he bought a new car, we don't care. The car may be long gone, But the stories live on. They just live on. When I think about rule number five that Gibbs had of don't waste good, I think about young people, and I think about, I can't help but think about my own life. And it's not that I'm thinking about myself, but I'm thinking about it as it relates to young people today. And I wonder the difference. I really wonder the difference. I used to draw a lot of cartoons, so much so that in every class that I ever was in, I did the bulletin boards because I was artistic, I was creative, and everybody knew that I drew, and I drew a lot, and I drew all the time. I don't draw anymore. I haven't drawn in a long, long, well, I doodle, but I stopped drawing. I stopped drawing in high school. I'm not looking for sympathy or have some, you know, big pall of sadness, you know, fall over everyone. It's just the truth. And for me, here was the truth of the matter. I didn't know anybody who made a living doing that. And being brought up by practical parents who were brought up by even more practical parents themselves. Who makes a living drawing? Well, I knew somebody did. I just didn't know who they were. My dad didn't. Gary's dad across the street, he didn't. The dad on either side of our house, they didn't. I didn't know anybody who did that. It was outside the realm of practical. I certainly hope that Don't Waste Good today, I would hope that kids have a broader horizon. I would hope that as educators that we are able to encourage our kids to have a broader horizon, because the world, while the world is this vast place with tremendous opportunities, man, has it shrunk. I know people today that just 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there's no possible way that I would have ever crossed paths with these people. But thanks to the internet and thanks to social networking, you can come to know people. Do you know how long it would take me to find dozens of people who make a living drawing today? Give me a couple of minutes. Give me an internet connection. Give me Google. And give me a couple of minutes, and I will find people, and I could reach out, and I could connect with people very quickly who make their living doing just that. And give me Skype and an internet connection, and give me 3 to 5 minutes, I can get somebody on a Skype call who would be willing to talk to me, who would be willing to talk to my students about what's possible. Now, you talk about don't waste good. Is there a kid in your class that just shows a proclivity for just something that's just easy to spot? I would hope that today we aren't hung up with, yeah, but you know, that's not real practical. Pick up any issue of Ink Magazine, pick up any issue of Fast Company. And you will find story after story, case study after case study of people who are doing some extraordinary, remarkable things in just crazy, ridiculous, non-traditional kinds of things. The world's full of them. Because, yes, the digital age changes everything. I'm the last generation of analog. It's digital. And digital is vast and at the same time small, so that we can reach out and we can make these connections. But it starts with leadership. It seems to always start with leadership. Gibbs says, I got vision. Everybody else has bifocals. Well, because he saw in Tony something that Tony didn't see. He saw that you're good. I rather suspect that these kids who sit in front of you day after day, I rather suspect that you can look at each of them, and I rather suspect that now that you've had these kids for a year or the better part of a year, And as we all wind down the school year, I rather suspect that there are all of these faces and all of these names, and you could look at them in the eye, and about something specific, you could utter those two words. You're good. I think back of over my classmates, and I knew kids who were just very talented at music, very talented at art, some very talented at math, some very talented in speech class, some very talented in history, others very, very talented at biology. And a teacher could have looked at any of us when I was a kid, and they could have looked at you when you were a kid, and they could have said about this thing or that thing, you're good. You're good. And I think of how monumentally different some of our lives might have been had that been the case. And I'm so thankful that today we are living in an age where I think most of us, hopefully, surely, most of us, embrace this art of the possibility because, yes, the internet and digital technology, it has changed everything. And while I grew up not knowing people who made their living drawing, if I were a young person today, I could easily know people who made their living drawing. And for me, that would change everything. That would be such a seismic shift in my perspective because then I could understand it's possible. They do it, and this guy does it, and this woman does it, and they live all over the world. And they're able to do it. Why can't I do it? But it just, in my age, in my era, it just did not seem possible. I often think about classmates that I had, and I think about Gibbs' rule number five, don't waste good. And I rather think that there's a lot of people in my generation that are wasting good simply because we didn't know and simply because we didn't know it was possible. And so here we are in Teacher Appreciation Week, and I guess what I want to say is two words to those of you that are in education, those of you that give yourself, those of you that are devoted, those of you that have a high degree of willingness, those of you that are just, you're just kind of on fire to make a difference in the life of a kid. Don't waste good. You're good. I think if we could pass it on, if we could kind of implant that into the heart and the mind of a kid, then hopefully as the years roll by, we'll raise up a generation that has a much better understanding of what's possible. But, you know, if you and I, if we don't have the vision ourselves, it's going to be real hard for us to pass on the vision. If we don't see the future first, I don't know how we can expect the students in today's classrooms to see a brighter future for themselves. If we don't have optimism, why should they? If we're full of doom and gloom, well, why shouldn't they be full of doom and gloom? I don't care what the economic climate may be. I don't care what the world situation might be. I don't care what problems and I don't care what challenges are beyond our control. And even though if all of these circumstances and all of these events could be corrected and our lives would be made easier, maybe even better, what difference does it make if we can't control it? You're telling me that in your classroom, the message that gets conveyed, the truths that are told, the optimism that could be shared, you're telling me you don't have that in your control? Sure you do. Sure you do. You're blessed with a golden opportunity to spend hours and hours with these young people every single day throughout the week. Don't waste it. And as you wind down the school year, don't waste these last few weeks just doing time. keep the message of hope and keep the message of optimism and keep the message of possibility ever before the eyes of the kids that sit in front of you. It's really important. Hey, my name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. That's the company name, Bula Network LLC. We're here in the North Central Texas area, Dallas-Fort Worth, emanating from the Yellow Studios here. We try to visit you every week. Sometimes we visit you more than once a week in these podcasts. I want to encourage you to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, or if you prefer something like a Google Reader, there's that orange RSS button over there. The main work that we do for education happens over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. It's kind of a joint venture with my son, Ryan. We're seeking to, we're seeking to teach, inspire, and encourage people in higher human performance in education. The biggest part of the work, I'm going to tell you, emanates from all the years that I have in operating businesses to help people in those things that matter most, because frankly, it's all about people. It's how we can better interact, how we can have better conversation, how we can lead, how we can inspire, how we can encourage people to just do better, be more effective. Over time, I found that there were tons of things that I had learned through the years that, sad to say, are just not all that commonplace in the world of education. And it's kind of my little encore career to give back, help teach some people some things that I was fortunate enough to learn along the way. Hey, join the list over there to the right. You can plug in your name and email address. Make sure you get updated on all the stuff that's going on around here. Thanks for listening. If you're a teacher, well done. Well done. Keep it up. Till next time, I'll see you.